This hour of the Weekend Real Estate Report originally aired February 5th, 2017.
You're listening to the Weekend Real Estate Report on 105.7 The Fan.
You do a great job here giving the audience quite a bit of information. For a lot of guys like me, I'm sure a lot of females have certainly been enlightened and informed to help their life a little bit better. So keep up the good work.
Once again, Carl Delmont.
Hey, so we were talking prior segment, Ed, about the... You mentioned Al-Qaeda, and a lot of people think, including myself, I thought that was a relatively new term, but it sounds like they had that term back in early to mid-90s.
Yeah, it was before that. I mean, my case was 1990, so clearly it was before that, and he came over years prior. I mean, he was from Egypt, but married his way into American citizenship and worked for New York City as a boiler engineer for years, so clearly it was much older than that.
Because it almost to make it seem like Al-Qaeda was a new name of a group or splinter groups that formed together that came after 9/11. So I always thought that it was a relatively newer term, almost like ISIS and ISIL and all these other things, but I guess this term has been around for a long time. You know, it's interesting, you know, with this book, Kevin Cowherd's the author, and famous Baltimore Sun columnist, and he actually was weird. He, almost like you, he was a columnist that covered current events and everything else, and mm-hmm. he got put in sports for a little while.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you were doing talk radio, and then he got in sports.
Actually, David Simon wrote the foreword.
Oh, he did?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Very cool.
Yeah. And we get a little tiny assist because he used our office mm-hmm. to write it.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. That's right.
So that was pretty cool. So, in the book, I mean, a lot of good stories. Did you also talk about... and the thing is, like our history, I remember when I first started doing radio with the station, and you had just gotten out, and mm-hmm. you were in Tampa mm-hmm. spraying cologne at the malls on people,
yeah.
and they called you up, and you would call one day a week. And I remember that was when I would come in and do the show, and I said, you know what, I want him to do a door. So I'm like, he's not even really a regular part of the show. I'm like, nah, it'd be good. I went back and forth, and next thing you know, you're on weekly. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, they're flying you up here and flying you back home on weekends.
Yeah.
And there we are.
Now it's 12 years later.
Yeah.
It's like I've been doing this for 12 years this year.
So also your first
absolutely.
Endorsement.
The
so
first,
yeah, cool.
You were the first, far and away the first. I can't believe how long I'm doing this. It's been 12 years this year. It's 2005.
Well, you're doing really well. So the book will be coming out soon. People can buy it, like we said, in different places. Anything else in the book you want to share?
Just, because it's just... That's one of the biggest stories there, but it just goes through a lot of things, and some of the stuff I share would be not FCC friendly because it's pretty graphic. I talk about, some of the stories are sad. There's some very sad stories. It's a heavy theme, you know. I mean, there is one story that's kind of funny in the beginning, but when I was a young officer, like another oddity is I went to the morgue the day John Lennon was assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
I did not see him, but the point, and it wasn't point of story. It was just a weird coincidence, sad coincidence. But it's just, it talks about how you develop when you're in a kind of a strange occupation like policing, where when I went to the morgue, they take you so you see things early that you will see later on in the street so you don't pass out in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
So they take you to watch autopsies. So you go into the morgue and they open up all the drawers and show you all the dead people, and then they take you into the autopsy room, which was just a total jolt for me because there were numerous tables in this brightly lit room with this... blood and organs everywhere, and the people are being literally sawed open, and organs are being weighed, and they're being stitched back with these giant needles, like, the couches. And it was the inhumanity of it got me very kind of upset. I got very light. I thought I was going to pass out, frankly. And it was really upsetting to me. I was 20 years old at the time.
Oh, wow.
And so I talk about that experience, and then I contrast it with being out in the street for a year. When you're young, you're a rookie officer, you get all the rotten assignments. So one of the assignments you get often is to guard dead bodies because the senior guys don't want to do it, obviously, and it's boring. And you sit and wait for the medical examiner to pick up the body. And it can take a day to pick up a corpse once the crime's... If it's a crime, once they process it, they just leave it because there's no rush. They get it 8 hours later or whenever they get there. So I get assigned to the Carter Hotel for exactly this.
Was that close to Dakota?
No. Okay. No, this isn't a John Lennon story. This is totally different. I brought that up because the timing was the same. But I'm in the Carter Hotel, which was a terrible hotel. I think TripAdvisor has one of the worst still, like years later. But I'm in the Carter, and the room is smaller than the studio. No joke. And there's a man on his bed, and there's really any room on each side. And he's naked in the bed, which is not abnormal. But he has a bullet hole between his eyes, which is abnormal. Mm-hmm. He was shot to death overnight. Murdered in his room. And he's lying there, kind of on the bed, half hanging off with this, you know, bullet wound between his eyes. And I have to wait until they pick him up and have nothing to do. I did bring a book. So I'm reading my book, which no one here gets out alive was the title. It was Jim Morrison's biography, which I thought was funny. But I'm standing there and I can't stand up for 8 hours and wait for this. You know, this is ridiculous. So I jump into bed with him. So this is just, I found it funny that the guy that was so, you know, kind of shocked by dead bodies a year prior is now like so comfortable with seeing this, you know, death by murder, that I just jump into bed next to this corpse and I read my book for the rest of the day with him lying next to me and never gave it a second thought. So that kind of stuff is in there as well. Just, you know, day-to-day routine police stories that people don't know about. It's a look behind the curtain for sure in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, from as long as I've known you, you know, the guy that goes to SUNY to play football comes out, becomes just a regular police officer, mm-hmm. works his way up the ranks, and I mean this nicely, but almost like the Forrest Gump, where like mm-hmm. your career is always taking you to like, you know, Forrest Gump, next thing you know, he's beating Nixon, he's beating
right,
this one.
Yes.
I mean, you get involved in all these things, and yeah. then next thing you know, you take the job in Baltimore and all the things that happen, and yeah. next thing you know, you transfer that into a successful radio career. And
yeah, I have the first Al-Qaeda arrest in America, and I create a squad that is now the subject of a TV show, The Cold Case Files. I mean, mm-hmm. I created the first cold case squad in New York City in the NYPD, and now that became a television show. So I've had a very interesting, you know, not altogether happy career, but I've had a very interesting career, if nothing else.
Did you read they just caught the guy that supposedly killed Eton, the little boy that was?
Remember, did they?
The guy confessed.
Wow.
So it just came out about a week ago.
I did not see. I missed that. And I worked in that precinct. I worked in the first precinct.
I figured I was close to where you were.
Yeah, I worked in that precinct. I knew the guy was a good friend of mine who actually was and he really had a hard time living with himself. It bothered him forever. He had the case, but it was a terrible story.
Yeah, there's all kinds of things. Just remember, because I grew up not about an hour from you, but the same media. So I remember growing up around the same time and hearing all those stories and It's interesting. And then here we are both transplants down in Baltimore.
Yeah.
And it all works out. Let's transition a little bit and talk about, so we have a new administration and it's the epitome of love them or hate them. But one of the first executive orders, well, one of them actually killed FHA. They were going to reduce the FHA premium. Mm-hmm. And then he did some things the same way. I'm not sure they're sovereign. Let's hold off on this. But the other one, of course, is the ban on immigration from certain countries and everything else. And so people say, well, wait a minute, how come no one, he's not banning Saudi Arabia? That's where most of the people came from,
right.
You know, all this other stuff. And then, you know, I don't know if it's a coincidence or not, but then you have Syrian refugees who just shut up the mosque in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of wonder, but what's your take on this whole immigration stance?
I don't love or hate the president, but he's the president now. So it's just, but I do agree with this travel ban because first of all he's asking for it. And there's so much misinformation out in the media. You know, the media's got some gall calling this a Muslim ban because it's not. What he's doing is, you know, there are certain countries that are state sponsors of terrorism. We know this and we know who the countries are. They're the ones identified. You're talking about Yemen, Somalia, Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya. These are the ones that have been doing this for decades.
This list is a similar list that's been around for about, what, 6-7 years?
It's been forever.
Yeah.
I mean, Libya's been in this game forever. I mean, just all these countries. They're the countries that are, you know, sponsoring terrorism throughout the world. There are many, numerous Muslim countries that are not on the list. I think Indonesia is the largest Muslim population in the world. Not mm-hmm. talked about.
And India has a big one as well.
They're all over the world. It's just, this is so untrue. But this is a media hype, and people who want to stir this up as some kind of, you know, like the rounding up of the Japanese in World War II, that's not what he's doing. That's not what this is.
This is
a temporary restriction on, you know, I think it's a 90-day thing. First of all, to get a better handle on who's coming in because they are pouring in with the refugees and people are coming in. And look, granted, most of the people are here for the right reasons. They're coming in as refugees. Mm-hmm. But there are terrible people who want to kill us sneaking in those groups. You've got to vet them as carefully as you can. And then people point to Saudi Arabia and countries like that and say, well, we're not doing it to them. Yeah, because we have assets on the ground in those countries.
Mm-hmm.
We have good intelligence in the countries that are on the list. We feel like we're doing a better job vetting before people get here of who is who. I mean, and it's not a 100% guaranteed game, but the countries of interest that are on the list, we have very little inside information because you can't get in. It's very tough to get people in and get a good handle on it with their intelligence services. So, you know, it's what's really ironic is I posted something about this, and someone here locally, it was a radio host, very left-leaning friend of mine, which really got me the most upset with this whole discussion is, I'm telling you my opinion. You may not agree with my opinion, but it's my opinion. Why is it when you give an opinion and people who disagree with this and people who are so anti this policy, if you don't agree and you try to give reasons why, you're called a racist. They think you're stupid. It just, I can guarantee I'm neither. And it really makes me angry to be painted that way. I'm giving you facts from my experience in history. We just talked about, I had the first Al-Qaeda guest arrest in America. I have some knowledge. I've been working on that because I didn't stop with 1990. I worked on it my entire career. Mm-hmm. The next 15 years, I concentrated on that. And I know a lot about it now. And I know a lot about what goes on internally in the United States. And they're here. You don't need more of them here. And then because the guy cited the fact that Nocera, in my case, well, he was an Egyptian. They're not on the list. And this is all BS. He's Egyptian. He was an American citizen. No. Your BS for twisting my words, because while that's in fact true, he was an American citizen. He came here as a terrorist, and they told him, they trained them to stay under the radar, stay out of police contact. He married an American woman to gain citizenship, so he would stay under the radar. That's exactly what they do. It's what they're trained to do. Once they become in contact with the police, they're of no use to terrorist groups.
Yep.
Because now you're being watched. So this is why it's so disingenuous. I love when people who know less about this than I do tell me what I don't know.
It just really frustrates me. Mark Twain said it best, better remain quiet and thought an idiot than open your mouth and remove all doubt.
Yeah.
And I think now it applies to social media. Better not post than to post something and prove and remove all doubt.
Because it really galled me, because this is how these guys operate. And these countries, so my point was, I just told you a story about the guy that, made the first Al-Qaeda killing in the U.S. Well, shouldn't we try to prevent more of those bad actors coming in here? I mean, if they're coming over, we've had it happen before. We know it happened. We did a terrible job stopping it when I had it in my hands. Why are we still afraid to just address this as it is? This is a dangerous world. This is one of the books that talks about me warning the country. It's called 1,000 Years for Revenge, because that's how long they don't care how long this takes. Mm-hmm. The people that are out there trying to kill us. If it takes 1,000 years, they'll take 1,000 years. They're going to do it, and they're doing it, and they're doing it. And I you remember my old show when I did the political talk. I told people that, they should start every meeting in America. I don't care if it's a college, a corporate office, a government office, wherever when you have your staff meeting in the morning, it should start with, and remember, they're trying to kill us. Mm-hmm. Because whatever business you're in, and when you're making your money, or you're at a ball game, or you're at the movies with your family, or you're enjoying your life, keep in mind there are people all around the world plotting as we speak to destroy the United States. And people forget this. They think that 9/11 is in the rearview mirror and we're all safe now. That's not the case. Look what happened in France. You had someone attack, soldiers and police officers at
the thing is, you don't hear about all the things they catch.
Right.
They don't want to report those things.
But they end up killing somebody who stabbed a soldier at the Louvre. This is what's going on in the world. If you don't pay attention to this, you're a fool. It's happening throughout the world. And with our borders so open, you set yourself up for disasters. You've got to be more careful and certainly have to be smarter about it. And that's all I'm saying. I'm not saying we should ban anybody of any race, any country permanent. And what's really funny about this, perhaps the nicest president in my lifetime, I'm probably the least effective, but the nicest, most humanitarian was Jimmy Carter. Yep. He did exactly this. He did this during the Iranian hostage crisis. Mm-hmm. He prevented people from Iran coming to this country for that reason. If Jimmy Carter can do it.
And I remember hearing about the students and everything else up in uproar because they were caught in a scenario there now.
Yeah.
All right. So let's thank one of our sponsors before we go to break. If you know anyone who is suffering from low vision, maybe it's legally blind or whatever the case may be, check out lowvisionmd.org. They've helped so many people for 40 years with locations all throughout Maryland. And look, there are people who have been told, we can't help you. These guys have a 98% success rate helping people with macular degeneration. They've also helped people with Stargardt's disease, color blindness. It's funny, we have a goalie on our soccer team who has red-green color blindness. And, talked to him one day, like, how do you tell what teams if like they're both dark colors? He's like, I just kind of look at faces. So I mentioned him to go down and check it out. But also, if you're just looking for an eye doctor, just want to get an eye exam, check out Asman Eye Care. It's another division of Low Vision MD. And they have offices right there in Timonium Cross in the fairgrounds. And it's a very thorough, complete eye exam. They'll check for dryness. They check, they measure your eyeball. They do all these other things that I've never had done before in all the years. I've worn glasses for 20-something years now. I've never had an eye exam like this. And I've learned so much about my eye health. And look, we have one pair of eyes. I mean, you know, they have to last us our whole entire life. I want to make sure that I'm taking care of them and I know all the right things. And these guys make sure I know. So check out lowvisionmd.org, Asman Eye Care. Tell me to hear on the Weekend Real Estate Report. I know they'll be happy to hear that, and you'll be happy to see all the things that they can do for you. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, a lot more to discuss with Ed Norris. Don't go anywhere.
The Weekend Real Estate Report will be right back on 105.7 The Fan.